often will hear people say, I work so much that I didn't have hobbies. I don't really know what my passions are because I've worked so hard. My friends are work friends because, well, all what I've done is work. I don't have a network because people come to me.
We really encourage our clients to use the words for now at the end of the sentence when they're asked, or even when they think about what they're going to do next. I'm going to explore nonprofit options for now.
There was this sense that people would value me differently. The retiring person thinks about what they're going to do, but they don't think about what their spouse or partner is, how it's going to impact them.
Top two or three fears we see when they leave their big job.
Welcome to the Stubbornly Young podcast for people in their 50s, 60s, and beyond who have a mindset that drives them to stay engaged in the world and relevant to the younger people in their lives. I'm Dave Tabor. I haven't got this whole stubbornly young thing fully figured out, and I'm frequently thinking about how to do this, what to learn, what to try, what to think. And to that end, in this episode, I'm joined by Leslie Braxick, PhD, and Mark Linz. They are the authors of Revealing Your Next Season, Reflections on 10 Years of Supporting Leaders Transitioning from Intense Careers to Fulfilling Next Seasons. They also lead a consulting practice called Your Next Season. Leslie and Mark, glad you're with me on Stubbornly Young.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, Dave.
You're welcome. The three of us are in different rooms. So, you know, listeners, if we step on each other, that's just what's going to happen. But together, you have built this business called Next Season. Talk about where that came from and, you know, sort of how you serve your clients now.
We recognize the need that executives we were working with were facing around what happens next, and the recognition that their whatever this retirement thing is just doesn't really have any meaning anymore, but really that life is really a series of seasons, and that we transition from season to season in our lives. And this is a big transition when you transition out of your major career to what you're going to do next, worthy of noting, worthy of understanding, and worthy of supporting people through. And that's where we came to really name it Your Next Season.
What is special about how leaders who had, say, intense, and you say that intense careers might approach their next season versus people who perhaps had, you know, less intense careers?
You know, I think there are a lot, probably more similarities than differences between both. But with intense careers, you tend to have your identity in your job. You tend to work crazy amount of hours. You give up a lot of the things that you really need in the next season. And so, you know, often we'll hear people say, I work so much that I didn't have hobbies. I don't really know what my passions are because I've worked so hard. My friends are work friends because, well, all what I've done is work. I don't have a network because people come to me, and so on and so on. So everything you need to really transition into that next season, you've given up because of that intense career. And so that's one of the real differences that we see, and one of the things we see pretty consistently.
Yeah. And you said they're more in common, but you just described some really different kinds of elements to people who've had.
There are some differences. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's in common between people who maybe had less intense careers, but still are finding challenges with this next season?
You know, one of the things I would say is that in common is the view that you can have an incredible purpose in that next season. I think there was this view when I was growing up that once you hit 65, and you retire, you're done. You do nothing. And your life is you're kind of on the wind down. I think it's the opposite. I think you've learned so much. You have wisdom, no matter what kind of career you've had. And take that and you can have an incredible impact.
So I noted in the foreword of your book, I actually read the foreword. I don't know why. I could almost sometimes just read that and be done. But I read your whole book, which I really enjoyed. And in fact, I'm going to show listeners I want to make sure we get a shot of it. Me with your beautiful book. And I noted in the foreword, an attribute of the best leaders is that they are energized by change. So how does that set the stage for your book and even for this discussion?
Well, they are open to new purpose, to new, to change, really. And when we talk about even the next season, it's really a transition out of a big job is your first next season, but there will be many other seasons. And that's why we call it your next season, because it's not just one big long season. There are many things that get triggered by other things. So we find that executives that embrace change and are open to change, continuous learners, those that are open to redefining themselves, to thinking of their superpowers in a new way, those are the ones that find true joy and purpose in their next season.
Hmm. Well, there's a great example. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, let me tell, maybe I give just a 30 second of my story because it fits exactly in what Leslie was talking about. But I spent 27 years at Bank of America. And I made the decision to retire really because of I had spent so much time away from family and so much time during the financial crisis, just going, you know, working nonstop. And I knew I always wanted to start a business, but my initial thought was start something in financial services. That's what I am. I'm a financial services person. And Leslie came to me with this idea of starting my next season. And at first it was like, but that's not me. And when we had the conversation about what we wanted the business to be and the impact, it kind of widened my aperture of, wait a second, what I have done is different than just, I'm more than just a financial person, you know, and my experiences are more than that. And I pivoted and made a change. And that's what we see in people, that ability to pivot and make a change.
So do you feel like, you know, normally we think of the next season, I think we think about like non-working kind of thing, a transition to not working, but you've transitioned to a different working.
Yeah. And I would say just the clients that we work with, executives that we work with, we see kind of three groups of people, I would say. One is there are some people that just say, I don't want to do anything. I really want to focus on, and I'll give you, I want to focus on families. I want to focus on friends. I want to focus on the things I couldn't focus on in my career. We see probably the largest group that says, I want a portfolio of activities. I want to stay busy. I want to have impact. I want to teach at a university. I want to be on a board. I want to be on a board of a nonprofit. I want to, you know, I want to give back. I want to mentor. I want to have a portfolio of activities that gives me flexibility. But we do see a portion of executives when they retire, they say, I really want to do something else. And I feel like I've got the energy and the enthusiasm to do something else. But I want to do what I want to really be thoughtful about what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so we really see all three of those.
Those three buckets. So let's talk about a shift in identity. I mean, one example in your book is Mark Shaken, who retired from bankruptcy law, became a nonfiction writer, and then wrote fictional thrillers. And I love his book. He's a great guest on Stubbornly Young. And we talked a lot about how to manage a shift in one's identity, not just in our own mind, but also how on others perceive us when we make these changes. You want to talk about that?
Sure. It's not uncommon that an executive becomes known by a job title or by a role that they played. You know, when they introduce somebody, what do you do? I am treasurer of Bank of America. I am this, I am that. So it just becomes their identity and who they are in their community, and not only just at work, but outside of work. So when that goes away, there's this stutter step of who am I now? And how do I introduce myself? And it really, we work a lot with clients to help them define themselves, not by the job they held or the title of the job, but by their interests, their passions, what they care about, what they think about, and helping them to realize, you know, who they are outside of work.
So what might that sound like if someone had been even, say, like they've been a mail carrier or a cabinet maker? You know, what might that sound like differently?
That I have spent my life working with wood, and I'm whatever they're doing next. I'm now teaching children how to work with wood, or, you know, it's part of it is defining themselves not by their title, but by what they do. So I love to mentor young people, or I, you know, Mark, I wanted to start a new business. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So he wasn't defined by being, you know, a finance executive, but he was a person who knew how to solve problems, who knew how to, who loved making decisions, who loved to lead, who was drawn toward the unknown, who could, you know, take chaos and create order. That's who Mark is.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, that, yeah. And that, you know, that identity. So we talk about, Dave, the idea that the arrow, the body of the arrow is unchanged. That's your career history, but the point of the arrow changes. So you might take those gifts and that strong, you know, that wisdom, and now apply it to leading a nonprofit or to volunteering or teaching or, you know, just being more present with your family.
Well, you know, I was struck by, and I'm going to turn to you in a second, Mark. I was struck by Mark Shaken because I'm like, I kept hammering on him. Like, don't people think you are just sort of ridiculous going from a bankruptcy attorney to writing thriller novels, you know? And I actually thought, well, is this going to be, was it somewhat embarrassing to tell people that this is what you want to do even before he was successful at it? So, yeah, I mean, you must encounter that all the time.
It is hard because you, and let's go back to what Leslie was saying. What is the first thing you're asked when you meet most people?
What do you do?
You know, you walk into a party, yeah. What do you do? And so all of a sudden you're not doing what you do. And that's universal amongst all of us, you know, we all, and, you know, and so then what do I do? Because often I found myself even when I started the company, I would say, I'm, my former job was this because it was my identity.
Yeah.
And then really kind of it had to reshape because, you know, to what I was doing now and to really who I was versus the job that defined me.
Yeah. Is there a sense that people value you differently, or maybe not you too, but value some people differently because of this change of path?
I'll speak for me. I think there was this sense that people would value me differently. I think what surprised me is that people didn't value me different. Actually, I would say in some cases valued me more. And I think the fact that, you know, the impact that my next season was having, the type of company we built, the, you know, the care that we have for our clients, you know, I'll have people come up and say, that's absolutely amazing, you know, and I love that you've completely changed your career. I didn't expect that. I expected everybody to focus on my first career. But I think there is this feeling that that's what they're going to focus on. And it's not going to be the same, but it's, I think, sometimes even better.
Yeah. Leslie, do women and men see shifts in identity differently? Do they handle it differently?
You know, I don't think there's absolutes that go by gender lines, but I think in general, women are known with a broader set of titles than just their job title. You know, they're often the mother, their work outside of the job on behalf of the family or with the children. I think their portfolio starts earlier, you know, without choice. They play a key role with the extended family. And so that remains, you know, that precedes the big career change.
Yeah.
But I think when you love what you've done and you have devoted your life to that, that change and that loss of identity is hard, regardless of gender.
What about age?
I think it, you know, the good news is I think people see themselves as having more runway now. And so they're energized by it. We've been at this for 11 years. I've yet to meet the client that thinks they're about to perish, you know, and that, you know, that are kind of feeling as though their mortality is, you know, imminent. It's quite the opposite. I think they're energized by how well they feel. You know, their excitement to focus on their health and their well-being and to value that differently and to be able to give time and space to that.
Yeah. Well, last thought along these lines, and that is, I loved in your book, the idea of moving through a mental transition using the phrase for now. And so listeners, this is like a tip in the middle of the podcast. This is like a tip. Mm-hmm. So explain that and how to use it.
Leslie, I'll let you explain that.
Sure. It's, we really encourage our clients to use the words "for now" at the end of the sentence when they're asked, or even when they think about what they're going to do next. So I'm going to explore nonprofit options for now. I'm going to volunteer and do this work for now. I'm going to go, I'm going to explore some boards. I'm going to, because of this, back to our first, your very first question, Dave, because it is a first next season, once they're in it, it's like a tree and new branches open up and they meet new people and they discover new possibilities. And some of them might be actually more interesting to them than the ones that were presented initially when they started down that one branch. And we say, take 100% structure, have a plan, and be 100% flexible. Be willing to shift your plan because you can.
Yeah, that whole "for now" seems like it'd be empowering. So you don't have to actually make hard decisions, right?
It is. It is.
It really is.
And what you, one thing real quick, Les, that people say is when you go back to the introducing at a party, you walk up to somebody at a party and you say you don't know what you're going to do, or everybody wants to tell you what you're going to do then, which can be really tough.
Yeah.
And
you
so,
should do this. You should.
But the "for now" gives you that freedom. Exactly like you said.
Yeah.
Question for you too. I mean, I think about, and I'm still working full time, but I can see with the day when I won't be. And leaders are used to providing sort of wise input, being valued for their input, and so forth. And you have an example in your book from Leanne Caret, and she's a former CEO of Boeing Defense, Space, and Security. I mean, a massive title.
Right.
And this whole idea of being able to provide wisdom and so forth. Like, I hope I can. And I want to. Like, I've learned all this stuff. I've become so valuable. I want to share it. I want to impart it on my friends and family. But where do I put that? Where did Leanne put that?
Leanne put it, I mean, that's exactly what she sought in her next season work, was where do I channel this energy, this calmness under pressure, this wisdom, where do I put that? Because it, and we see this with a lot of our clients that are like Leanne, that just have a lot of gas left in the tank and they want to make a difference with it. So Leanne is on 3 public boards. She's advising on a PE board. She's an executive at residence at her alma mater, Emory Riddle. She has received several national awards lately from Air and Space. And she's a My Next Season advisor. She actually, you know, about a year into her transition, you know, because it was quite a, you know, dramatic transition for her, you know, was, wow, how much people would learn from her experience and the wisdom she had amassed in that process. And I think she, if she were here, she would say she's as happy or happier than she's ever been. But it wasn't a here to there. And that's the thing, that there is a, you know, there's a crossover, and it's sometimes very painful.
Well, and then Mark, there's on the other, kind of almost seemed different to me that you have another example, Jerry Thomas, who is the former chief diversity officer at Bank of America, who talked about recalibrating how one views their value. So is that different from what you just explained with Leanne?
I wouldn't say that she recalibrated her value. I think it truly is her next season. I think she takes all of what she gained, her skinned knees, her successes, her joys, and I think she's repurposed them in new ways, and she's finding tremendous joy. She even entered a cake into, you know, a county fair where she lives, because it's something she had always wanted to do. You know, we had a client very early on. She was one of the top executives at Vanguard. And when we really talked to her, like, what is it that you are most excited to do? She said, you know, 5 years ago for my 50th birthday, my 4 daughters gave me a sewing machine. And it's still sitting in the box and collecting dust. And they gave me that sewing machine because they always heard me say I wanted to learn how to quilt like my grandmother. And so part of what we helped her do was to find, you know, near where she was going to be living, where she could take lessons on that particular brand of sewing machine to learn how to quilt. And that was so thrilling for her. And she was being sought after by big boards. And it was really, in her mind, more of the same. But what she really wanted was to honor something that was deep in her heart that she had never really been able to give the time and space to.
Yeah.
So I think there's things like that that emerge that can be honored in your next season. And that's part of the specialness of the transition time.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, I don't know which one of you wrote this in the book, but you referenced learning from your youngers, which I thought was super cool. Because like, how do you juxtapose that with sharing wisdom?
To me, and Leslie and I both believe in this, a few things that I'll say here. One is being a lifelong learner is incredibly important. And it's incredibly important as we grow older to continue to learn. One of the things we hear that particularly executives miss or leaders miss is that intellectual curiosity, that constantly being intellectually challenged. One of the great ways to learn that we often don't take advantage of is from the younger people, you know, and, you know, whether it be, we spend time with our team on, you know, little things, how to do better PowerPoint presentations, or the use of AI, you know, pulling people with AI expertise. I joined the board of a startup that was an AI startup, started by a young person that I was mentoring, and I did it so that I would learn, to help him, but to learn about artificial intelligence. It's that constantly desired to learn, but realizing the younger generation can teach us an awful lot. And that's something we both really believe in.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I'm certainly on board with that thinking. I mean, that's one of the whole premises of Stubbornly Young, is to stay relevant to the younger people in our lives. And learning from them, I think, is probably a really good way to do that.
There's so much to be gained. I mean, that's a generation that's hardwired to collaborate. You know, I come from a generation where the companies would spend millions of dollars in TQM trying to teach people to work together and share ideas. You know, the younger generation they're hardwired to collaborate, to share ideas, and to believe that they can learn from others and take that and apply it. I mean, just that alone is worth so much, but that's just the beginning. There's so much to be learned and gained.
You have another example in the book, and listeners, the book is really interesting in its format because each chapter is essentially some principles and a case study, which is really a wonderful way to digest this content. And another example is Doug Parker, and all these people are really impressive. Doug Parker was past chairman and CEO of American Airlines, and his next season had a really strong focus on public service, giving him new passion, purpose. You've described others in that way. But to what extent, based on all you've seen in this space, all the consulting you've done, is serving others like a key ingredient, almost a requirement to life satisfaction in a next season?
Well, Mark and I believe it is, personally, at a personal level. And we each and together live our life and run our company with that belief. We definitely have people that come through that, you know, that don't share that belief in the exact sense. And in no way do I think that means they won't find joy or happiness. But I would say the vast majority of people are excited to give back in big or small ways. And I'll tell you something, Dave, for a lot of executives, they've been, you know, pitched to give money as a way of giving back for their careers. Yeah. But that's not what they want to focus on. They want to volunteer, you know, or they want to make a difference in something that they care about and to bring their efforts and their capabilities to that.
Yeah.
And Doug's a shining example of that.
And we do see that. And I'm going to tell one quick story because I think it's really relevant, but we see that we do see that consistently of people wanting to give back. But at the beginning of the book, we talk about a client, Liam McGee. He was a good friend of mine. Leslie coached him. He was the CEO of Hartford. He had to retire early because of illness. And one of the things he wanted to do was mentor a non-for-profit CEO. And so he came to us and said, I'd really like to mentor a non-for-profit CEO. He mentored a non-for-profit CEO that she was a first-time CEO. She'd never dealt with a board. She had just received a grant from a large corporation to go from a regional nonprofit to a national nonprofit. And he would spend like a day a month with her, going through and helping her with strategy, helping her to how do you work with a board? Thinking through all these things. He was very vulnerable, very honest, right up until the time when he passed away. In fact, I think the week that he passed away at his hospital room, he spent a half a day with her. And after every meeting they had, he would write us an email and say, that changed my life. He changed my life, his advice. And he would write and text after every meeting and say, thank you so much. I'd love giving back and making a difference.
Wow.
And that's the that's what we see pretty consistently, but it's such a great story of that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this question because, well, it's even an awkward question to ask. And that is this, like, is there some sort of value continuum around purpose? I mean, what, you know, you just described a great example of somebody wanted to give back. There are people who want to feed starving children, and there are others whose purpose stated when they stop working is to have a single digit handicap. So is there judgment around that? Should people feel as though, wow, if I expanded my desire to give back, my life would be better? I mean, how should we think about that?
I think sometimes people will state something like a single digit handicap as a goal, but when you listen for the sentences 2 through 5, and because I love to golf with my son, or because it's something I get to do with my oldest friends, or, you know, because I do a golf outing with my, you know, there's usually
something deeper.
Yeah. And so they don't, it may not be what's motivating them, and they're not always self-aware of the role that it's actually playing and drawing them toward that. I almost always will hear, because they'll say, I really want to do this. And you say, why? And they'll say, well, because that gives me the chance to do these things, you know, and I always, if you listen a little bit longer, it reveals itself that there's usually some deeper meaning or purpose to the activities beyond just what it's at the surface level.
Would the same be true of someone like Mark Shaken, who, you know, like, why do you want to write a novel? You know, I mean, do people tend to, even something that seems profound, like I want to mentor a nonprofit leader, is there something deeper that you talk about with these folks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, where Doug Parker's idea for breaking down barriers came from, well, I mean, he had certainly cared about that initially, but where that surfaced in the process was an exercise that we work with clients on. It's called the What Bugs Me list. But we say, what bugs you? Like, what really gets under your skin? Like, when you walk by a homeless person, does that stir your heart? You know, do you wake up and see snow in July and think, what's going on with climate? Like, what is it that troubles you? What is it that worries you? What lives in your heart that you really care about? And it was that. And Doug said, I'll tell you what, less than 3% of all commercial pilots are persons of color. You don't even need to have a college degree to be a commercial pilot. You need about $100,000 to go to flight school, but inside of 10 years, you'll be a millionaire. So if we had more pilots of color, it would change the economic landscape of our country. So he had taken attempts to work at that from his chair at American Airlines, but really was not successful. And so it was that identification of being an issue that he cared about that led him to take the next steps and put a white paper and a business plan and recruit, you know, you know, and to go after that. And it's amazing what they've done already.
Wow. Mark, let me ask you about a couple of tactical things. One is, and you've got a chapter on partner framework, and we could do a whole nother session on just that. So we can't get into all of it, but here's what I want to talk about. That you're referring to really a deep discussion with one's partner about 6 or 7 topics of a next season. So again, without going to a whole framework, I mean, talk about the need to align or at least communicate around next season with one's partner.
I think it's incredibly important. And I think that often the retiring person thinks about what they're going to do, but they don't think about what their spouse or partner is how it's going to impact them, or even often getting their input into what they're going to do and having that communication. And sometimes we don't even know how to communicate that. You know, we kind of go through and we plan the way we did in our business.
Right.
We plan out what we're going to do without ever having the conversations at all. And I think yeah. We see that very common. It's incredibly important to think through and to have the conversation. We have a client that, and now he's an advisor, and I love it. He sat down and they put together a little, you know, we have a video of them sitting next to a yellow board that they have sticky notes all over what they want to do and over the next couple of years. And they each have a glass of wine and they do it like once a quarter. Uh-huh. They've made a little fun activity out of it in the glass.
That's cool.
But they talk through, you know, here's what he wants to do. Here's what he wants to do. How can she help him? How can he help her? How do they both, you know, what do they want to do together? How can they help each other accomplish, you know, what they both want to do? He had been the executive. She really wanted to open an art gallery. He helped. She opened an art gallery. She ran it. He helped from the sidelines, her run it. But it's that understanding and that communication is so incredibly important.
Well, I hope if we're all happy, right, at the end of this session, we'll agree to circle back and do a whole session on this partner framework. It really seems quite insightful. But I want to move on because I have another question. Again, tactical, Mark. You have a section in the book about networking, and that really surprised me. And then it intrigued me because it encourages networking. And my first thought was like, I'm done with that. I don't have to do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. And then as I start thinking about it, I'm like, you know, what a cool way to meet new friends, to have new stimulating ideas. I mean, is that where that comes from?
Yeah, I think of it slightly different than the traditional networking. I think of it as building relationships. So that would be one thing I would say to start. It's incredibly, incredibly important. Almost anything you want to do in that next season comes from networking. You know, if you want to be on a corporate board, vast majority of corporate board positions come from networking.
Hmm.
Vast majority, if you want to teach at a university, vast majority come from networking. They don't, you know, you set some come from searches and so on, but they vast come from networking. And it is building relationships. I mean, one of the things that is so important is having community. And you can lose your community when you leave your, you know, when you leave your job, and having that, you know, networking and building relationships, like you said, is so incredibly important. So to me, it's one of the most important things you need to do when you leave is to be networking. But it's often hard. It's surprisingly hard for people because we network when we're young. And we kind of quit networking.
Kind of coast on where you are. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you don't have to network in your job.
Yeah.
And you don't. And all of a sudden you leave. And I'll get people that will come to me and say, okay, I don't even know how to network. You know, how do I even start that? You know? Yeah. And but I'll also have people that come to me and say, yeah, I decided I was going to start networking and I met so and so, who probably could help me more than anybody in the world with what I want to do. But the great thing is we've become great friends. And if they help me, that's a bonus. But I don't need them to help me. I just want their friendship. I built a relationship. And I think that's really the key.
Cool. All right. A couple more questions as we wrap up. Stubbornly Young, as I mentioned, has a really strong focus on staying relevant to the younger people in our lives. For me, that means staying up on the changing world, particularly technology. Mark, you talked about being on a board specifically because you wanted to be involved in AI. But what's your experience, both of you, been about the impact of staying relevant to your clients, others' ability to actually have a happy next season? Is it just me, or is this a real pattern everybody should pursue?
We would support your point of view, Dave. It's incredibly important. And I think it's one of the greatest fears when executives transition out of their core job is, will I still be relevant? And so part of what we try and help them find are ways to take and repurpose, we call them their superpowers, but to really, so that they can continue to find and feel relevant. Because I think, and we see, I would say it's in the top two or three fears we see when they leave their big job, because, you know, they are a magnet in the world is full of nails when they're in those big jobs, right? And then they lose that magnetic power when they step out, and it's, who am I now? And so they have to figure out how to make themselves relevant and how to pursue that. We think it's incredibly important. Mark, what would you add?
No, I agree 100%. And I do think staying relevant and engaging with the younger generation and in general with what's going on in the world is so incredible. I mean, it's so needed, not incredible, but, and it's so important. You know, just to dig in and understand and think about and so on of what's going on.
Yeah. The prior episode of Stubborn Lang, I had an expert on AI, and that was so fun for me. And I took some of his tidbits of advice about how to actually engage with it. It's been super fun. All right, last question. And what is for each of you separately, with all your experience helping clients now through the years plan for successful next seasons, some were retirement, some weren't. As you mentioned, there are a few different buckets. Like, what's the one thing that you think will be most important for you as you continue to look at next seasons?
I think the most important thing is a little bit of what you've landed upon about relevance, but I think bringing a spirit of gratitude to whatever we do has a lot of underpinning of things I care the most about. I think bringing a spirit of gratitude means you notice the world around you and people's contributions and role in that. It means that you have empathy, you know, for other people's circumstances in order to have gratitude for the circumstances that you're in. And I think it also ensures that you're purposeful and intentional in how you live your life and in the choices that you make, and that there are unintended consequences sometimes to our choices, even though it's not what we intended. So I think for me, the most important thing is just having a spirit of gratitude. And I think the things that underpin that are the things probably I value the most.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. Mark?
No, I really like that. I would say two things for me. One is, just as I think about next season, to me, it's, I tend to go, go, go. And so the problem that I have is to stop and pause and think about what to do, you know? So to me, that's one of the things we tell our clients is stop, pause, really contemplate, take the time to think about what to do. And so to me, that's kind of a lesson even to myself that I have to, you know, do that. Mm-hmm. Number two is the thing that has really hit me is the impact that we can have, even the words that we say can have, and particularly on the younger generation. And so to me, that's the area that I really want to continue to give back to. Mm-hmm. Is that younger generation. And I find myself constantly thinking about that generation, whether it be anywhere from my kids to young professionals that come to me, you know, in a wide range. But yeah, we can have such tremendous impact in taking advantage. You know, you can either have impact or you can do nothing about the impact. And I'd love to have impact.
Yeah, yeah. It's what you said really brought a note back to me. I mean, I learned years ago when I had my own company, I did this, like, it was like an Outward Bound retreat or something. And somehow one of the lessons came across that because I was a go, go, go person and you're encouraging your clients to pause, one of the lessons came across to me was that planning, even pausing, is an action.
It is an action.
Yeah. And so for somebody that's just driven to act, that kind of gave me permission to act by doing nothing but thinking. Yeah. You know, it's just different.
Yeah. And I think we often say not just take time to pause, but make time to pause. Mm-hmm. And that to me is, it's an action, like you said.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important.
Yeah. And Leslie, thanks for your comments about gratitude, listeners. And also Leslie and Mark, you may know one of my prior guests' name is Chris Shembra, who's now become sort of this gratitude guru. He's speaking all over the world, a great guy. So if you want to learn more about gratitude, listen to the episode with Chris Shembra. So any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Just encouragement that each of us have gifts that perhaps we aren't always aware of. And I think many people feel like the end of that major career is in fact an ending, but it really is a beginning of something, you know, quite wonderful and not dissimilar from winter to spring. You know, we may plant bulbs that never come up, but then amazing things come up where we didn't even know seeds were planted before. And so, you know, enjoy the possibilities of what happens in that spring season and just live fully into it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I echo what Leslie said 100%. I would say, I was going to say almost the exact same thing. Often we think that retirement or when we leave a corporate job, that's the end. And I actually think that's the beginning.
You know, if somebody else were saying that, I would say, wow, that sounds really trite. But you two have been helping people discover that with great success. And so hearing it from you two means a lot. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Let's wrap up. This is episode 19 of the Stubbornly Young podcast for people in their 50s, 60s, and beyond who want to remain engaged in the world and relevant to the younger people in their lives. Leslie, Mark, glad you could be part of Stubbornly Young.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you for having us, Dave.
You're welcome. And listeners, yes, their book is called Revealing Your Next Season. So I hope you'll check that out with more detail. I'm Dave Tabor. If you've got friends and family who are stubbornly young, please recommend that they give this a listen. And if you've got ideas for episodes and content, let me know at dave@stubbornlyyoung.com. Glad you've joined me on this journey.